Back at the Mobile Surgery Hospital, it is almost dark as the three pilots of the detachment sweat out their boy. Although it's against regulations, the final landing is made with the aid of a flashlight borrowed back at the rice paddy.
It's just about 9:20, and Lieutenant just come in. Now landing.
The mission over, the patient processed, operated on, and resting comfortably before 11. The flyers of the fourth helicopter sit down to drink beer out of cans and get ready for another day with the windmills. Lieutenant Dayton L. Warren of Lufkin, Texas, who has, as they put it, retrieved hundreds of guys with holes in their stomachs, makes a little speech about his job and his thoughts.
We copter pilots feel that we're really helping the boys doing the fighting. Some of the infantrymen say that they'd almost rather see a helicopter evac in the area than a fighter strike, which may be stretching a point, but we know for sure it boosts their morale immeasurably to know that if and when they get hit, they'll be back at a hospital before the smell of burnt powder has left their nostrils, at least within an hour or two. I don't want to portray us as heroes, because we're definitely not. The real heroes are the poor rain and mud spattered, unshaven, bleary-eyed does that we retrieve. No matter how tired they are, or how frightened they may be, or how contorted their faces are with pain from separated bones and ground gristle and split muscle, they always have a smile for us, and a thanks, Joe, or a good ride, Lieutenant. And that helps us a lot. It makes us feel that our job is worthy of all the effort we can put out. That's about all I have for you now. I might mention that the other pilots in our detachment are Bill Wiltsey of Toledo, Ohio, and James E. Chick Childers of Louisville, Kentucky, and Hank Lamar, Lieutenant Hank Lamar of Rosebud, Texas.
You are listening to Hear It Now, CBS's weekly document for air, based on the week's news and the people who made it. The program continues immediately after this pause for station identification. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This is CBS in Champaign-Urbana, WDWS. Say, you'll find a complete stock of cool, comfortable, crease-resistant Champion slacks at Pat Kane's, 202 North Neal in Champaign. Champion slacks, America's finest, the only slacks with zip pocket. Try them on. And while you're at it, how about looking at Pat Kane's selection of straw hats priced from $3.50 to $10? Yes, you'll find real values at Pat Kane's. Shop at Pat Kane's for Father's Day items.
Is program 27 on Hear It Now. A full hour review of the week's news told in the actual recorded voices of the men and women who make the news. Once again, here is the editor of Hear It Now, Edward R. Murrow.
The word narcotic was in the news this week. The word dope, usually reserved for sinister dens in the Orient and Sax Rohmer hideaways near the waterfronts of wicked cities, came home to American parents this week, and was as close as the corner candy store or the lavatory of the neighborhood high school. Every big city in the country was involved. Because New York has more of everything, good and bad, it would seem to have more teenagers who take dope. Testimony disclosed that the use of marijuana, heroin, morphine, and cocaine has increased 700% since 1946. Dr. William Jansen, who tried to fight this menace in the more than 723 schools he runs, was one of the first witnesses.
Is Boys High or Manuel Fanny High School on your list of even suspected places? Is it?
Not of specific children who was suspected. I think, Mr. Tartikoff, I've tried to make that clear. Now, we knew that there was a reported bad condition around those two high schools.
You never told that to me or to Mr. Tartikoff.
Mr. Goldstein, again I say, the thing that you asked me was specific known cases.
3 weeks ago, Dr. Jansen had stated that he thought there were 154 known cases of narcotic addicts in New York schools. This week, he amended the figure.
Undoubtedly, it has become profitable for certain gangsters to sell this, and they're looking for a new market among children.
Do we both agree now, according to your estimate,
There are about 1,500 drug users in our schools today.
I would put it this way, Mr. Goldstein, that it is entirely possible that there may be that many drug users. Frankly, I don't know, but I will say this, that I think the person best in position to judge was Lieutenant Boylan, and he was of the opinion that there are probably 5,000 teenagers, most of whom are not in school.
No youngsters appeared at the hearings in an effort to preserve what little self-respect remained. Instead, recordings of dope addicts were heard. Here is a 16-year-old girl who was a veteran of 3 years.
When I tried to stop, I got a backache and my legs started to ache. I knew then that it had become a habit and that I was addicted. I couldn't stop. My boyfriend and I didn't have enough money for all that we needed, so I used to walk down the street and panhandle. People would give me a quarter or 50 cents if I told them a story that I lost my money and I needed money to get home. My boyfriend and I decided that we didn't have enough money to buy dope, and we decided to try breaking into a home in our neighborhood to see if we could steal some money. We were caught by the police and sent away for several months. By this time, I had become neurotic, and I was sent to a mental institution for treatment for about 6 months. After I was discharged, I returned home and went back to high school in the Bronx. After I was out of school a few days, I started on the heroin again. It cost me about $3 or $4 a day. My boyfriend also supplied me whenever he could with heroin. We would go out together and get high. I used to sleep with him whenever we got high. I hope I will not go back to using dope anymore.
The witnesses told of the rings throughout the schools, who were fences for the operators who sought this outlet for their vile product. A 17-year-old boy who was not a dope salesman, but was the school bookie, had a working arrangement with his fellow merchant.
You have seen students buy from this person?
I did.
And what would they pay, say, for marijuana?
75 cents, and gradually, as you continue to have it, $3, $5, no limit.
You mean 75 cents per cigarette?
That's right.
And you were saying something about a habit. You mean when the students became addicted to marijuana?
That's right.
He would charge them more?
That's right, more.
How many students would you say in this school, of your own knowledge, were addicted to marijuana?
Well, it's hard to say. Well, I know how much he grossed in, as far as I know. $300 to $400 daily.
He grossed $300 to $400 daily.
That's
in this
right.
School? How did you know that?
I used to be a bookie in the school, and afterwards he used to bet, and then I became very good friends.
I used to take bets from students, and you also took bets from him.
That's right.
And
I used to play cards with him many times, too.
I see. And he would tell you that he grossed
$300 to $400
a day. Did it ever occur to you that he might be exaggerating to build himself up?
No.
Did you think that he was telling the truth when he told you that he
lost grossed? Lost enough money to me, so he should be telling the truth.
I see. And how much you say he lost to you?
Well, that's my business.
That's my business. Miss Doris Clark, Chief Probation Officer, has made a lifetime study of minding this business. She is concerned about the lack of provision for the cure of this strange malady.
We've had youngsters tell us all kinds of stories as to how they got started on it. What seems to be a new trend, we have a girl who is illegitimately pregnant, and the boyfriend will tell her that if she takes heroin, she'll have an abortion. We've had youngsters brought before the court who have already had cures, are back on drugs, are back before the court again. The stories are heartrending stories. The tragedy to the life of the youngster and the tragedy in the lives of the parents are the heartrending things that are unusually disturbing to us. But I repeat again, the real tragedy is we get them before the court, what are we going to do with them? There are no treatment facilities for these youngsters. There's no point in releasing them to the community to have them go back, contaminate other youngsters in the community, or go back on the drugs themselves. I've said again and again, the appalling thing to me is not what we know about drug addiction, but what we don't know about it.
Other hearings will be held in other cities. And undoubtedly there, too, we will learn what we don't know about it. More than anything, we don't know the cause of it. These are days for passing the buck. We blame the Russians for many of our tribulations, or the Democrats, or Republicans, or our allies, the special interests, or the farmers. But here's one we can't pass on. For here, we are the ultimate buck. If we continue in our failure to enforce our laws, the responsibility for the degradation of our youth will be ours. And when history takes its revenge, we won't be able to pass the buck. This is the season of commencement speeches, cloistered halls, caps and gowns, and the call and challenge to face bravely a world beset with doubt, tensions, and uncertainties. More than 1 million youngsters are graduating from high school this year, some of them prepared, others not, to begin the search for the keyhole that will fit the key of their hopes, dreams, and aspirations. In these closing minutes, we'd like you to come with us to Afton, Missouri, a calm and comfortable community of tree-lined streets and well-kept homes on the outskirts of St. Louis. Nothing very exciting happens in Afton, and those who live there are not of a mind to excite easily anyway. But when graduation day comes around, that's something else again. This is the day that sort of spells a youngster's coming of age, a day of mixed emotions which we're not apt to forget quickly. And so, for those who have yet to look forward to this experience, and for those who like to hold open the door of memory for a few minutes, we've come to Afton on graduation day. Let's go over to the high school gym and watch the photographer take a picture of the class of 51.
I want you to give me all your strict attention. We want to get a good picture. We want you to take this home, and Mom will say, well, where's Junior? And there's Junior all a blur. Now, I want you all to look to that palm there. Now, I want you to look to the speaker stand. Now, I want you to try to look a little intelligent and hear to me. That's it. Thank you very much.
Now, that's over. Here are some oral portraits of the 64 graduates. Let's thumb through the yearbook. Here's Robert Curtin, voted the life of the party.
Well, someone's got to keep the party alive. I sing a little, dance a little. I'm not much of a wit. Well, here we go anyway. I like the wide open spaces out where the cactus grows, where two guns beat four races. I like the wide open spaces.
The most honest member of the class, Lorna Galt.
I always made it a policy, not during examinations, not to look over anybody's shoulder or across the aisle. And my marks were just average. I imagine if I had have looked, they would have been higher.
Afton's athlete of the year, Robert Bush.
The best way to keep in trim is no smoking, drinking, or late hours. Eat a lot of steaks and drink plenty of milk.
The queen of the class, Ruth May Werner.
Well, I've always known my mother was beautiful, and my father's always seemed like a good-looking guy, but I never thought anything like this would ever happen to me.
The hardest worker, Mary Ann Alvarez.
I don't consider anything a hard job. I get a lot of fun out of doing whatever I do, and I think if there has to be a job done, just go ahead and do it on your own, and everybody will be satisfied with it, I guess.
The neatest girl in the class, Jan Foster.
Build your wardrobe around one basic color in which you can wear all your accessories and not have to buy more than you need. Arrange your wardrobe in such a way as to be attractive to other people.
The most popular boy, Donald Hobson.
Well, I always tried to be friendly to everybody and do for others what I would want others to do for me. I just tried to be friends, good neighbor, and just a pal.
And the one most likely to succeed, Lee Pitzer.
I'm just an average guy. I like to play golf and go swimming and date and dance and have a good time.
It's a hot day in Afton, over 90. But over in the corner of the gym, the school band tunes up for the last rehearsal.
All right, Ollie, play your Be Natural. Trumpet. Horns. Saxes. Okay. Now listen carefully. We open with a fanfare, and right after the fanfare, you go into the processional.
Teacher Doris Ahrens wants everything to be just right tonight as they come down the aisle.
Right, people, let's start with our rehearsal. Will you line up with your partners the same order that you lined up the last time that we rehearsed?
The baton is raised and the festival march begins. Miss Ahrens, a youthful, pleasant, conscientious sort of person,